You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles, and pancakes. The SML Podcast.
Up in smoke, that's where I wanna be. 'Cause I'm hanging out with Joe Kim and I gotta pee. I just ran out of Fritos and this show's just too long. So I take a toke, all my cares go up in smoke.
Up in smoke, please do not damage my calm. I just got off a breakup phone call with your mom. She spent all my money, now I'm broke. So I take a toke, and all my cares go up in smoke.
Up in smoke, dump the bong water in that bucket. Because there's more to life than try it, buy it, or fuck it. This show is normally depressing, except this week Grant's here and that rules. So tune in for a stream that's at best half best. And don't climb that flight of stairs, or else you're gassed. This is episode 420 of the SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a very special episode because as of recording, it is Thursday, the 20th, which means absolutely nothing. Jacob and Aki are here. How are you two doing?
I'm doing better by the minute.
You're drunk, aren't you?
No, I'm not even close. I just started. But,
nice.
But Jacob, before the end of this, I'm going to be tore up.
Sweet.
Be great.
Jacob, how are you feeling?
I am above the influence.
Because it's the 20th of Thursday.
The 20th of Thursday, yes.
Yes. Stemage, you're here. How are you doing?
Of my gaping
I'm good. Butthole. You are the influence, Joe.
I am the influence.
Can you hear this? Can you hear this?
And I am above you, so yeah.
Does that make noise? Or does Discord kill that rattle?
We heard it a little bit.
Barely audible.
I made some sort of ungodly concoction out of the wife's liquor cabinet, so.
Nice.
We'll see how this goes.
You heard Lady Magritte is here as well. Brie, how are you doing?
I pre-gamed.
Yeah, you were smart. I forgot.
Good job, Aki.
I already finished the first bottle.
It's like Aki was looking forward to this one. She's like, I can't wait
for
this one.
Follows the abyss of my gaping butthole.
We have got Javors rating us with 9 viewers. I feel bad for every single one of you who just came in right now, but it is going to be a good show. I swear to God, because we have a guest joining us.
Fall into the abyss of my gaping butthole.
Another raid from Lloyd. Wow, we are getting all the raids. Jacob, your butthole is getting just exposed like crazy tonight.
I mean, that's an average Thursday, really.
Yeah, it is. Good shit. Adrian Reedman is joining us tonight. Adrian, how are you doing?
Hey, everybody. I'm doing good.
Welcome to the show. It is great to have you on. You are here to talk about your game Cavity Busters, which, just launched tonight?
Yeah, it launched today on consoles, but it's been out on Steam for the past year.
Well, for the people who don't know what Cavity Busters is, give us the sales pitch. What is your game all about?
Oh, I'm so bad at the sales pitch. So it's a roguelite, bullet hell, tooth punk. It's got a tooth theme. It's got a unique mechanics, movement mechanics. So it's a bit of a overwhelming experience for new people, I would say.
I gave it a spin last night, and the only thing I felt overwhelmed by was the audio, which I love. This game is gooey and fantastic. I'm an audio fanatic, so I appreciate. Well, it's all fantastic, but I was just like, oh my god, this game is so gooey out of the gate. So really having fun so far.
Yeah, that's my favorite part too, because it's the only part I didn't have a hand in. So it's like the best.
You outsourced your goo?
Yep, I had a guy from his name is Ben, and he did the music and he did all the sound effects. I think like the first day he worked on it, he's like, I went to the store and I bought a bunch of fruit to smush into my microphone. So.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Just mashing for, that's beautiful. Yeah, the sound, it's a very intense sounding game. Like it's visceral, it is mushy, it is gory. Like where did the influence for this game come from? Where did everything start with this game?
I guess maybe the obvious is Binding of Isaac was kind of the start of it, but as I developed it, other influences came in, like games like Monolith and Enter the Gungeon and things like that. So I do try to shy away from the Binding of Isaac, because that's all people see when they see it. They're like, oh, this is just a ripoff. But it is on the surface. Yeah, it's got some of those pillars, but it is a completely different little monster.
It plays really tight. I've played a bit of Binding of Isaac, and I have a lot of friends that are into it, and I plan on recommending this game heavily to them. But it's just, you learn a lot up front. There's a lot of really interesting movement mechanics. I love like the aiming reticle. It's like dual stick, but there's an aiming reticle that is used for all kinds of stuff, like the teleporting and all kinds of other stuff. It's super creative. A lot of, like, I know things are going to evolve, but right out of the gate, I mean, there's a lot of unique mechanics to pick up on. Feels fresh.
I like the wall running. That's something, a cool little addition that lets you get to areas you wouldn't normally get to. It lets you approach rooms in a different way when you're able to just run along the wall, take people out and get behind them, or just jump and jump on the enemies. That's a cool addition too.
Yeah, the jumping is rad. The jumping and the I'm a big fan of that.
I really wish I was as good at the game as you guys were. Jesus.
Oh, it's hard.
What did you think of it? Tell us about your time at the game.
I fucking sucked at it. I am so bad at the wall running. Like, it's disgusting how bad I am at it. And trying to dodge the bullets, especially when you have to wall run, because, like, in the tutorial, where it tells you, oh yeah, if you will run, you can block bullets. I couldn't even make it through that without dying a few times. I am fucking god awful at this.
I'm feeling pretty good about it, but you immediately butt up against some pretty tough cookies. With they all have like unique bullet patterns. I can see why this is a game it's a game built to kind of bang your head against. But it's not like they're all that different or that hard. It's just a matter of spending time with it. But yeah.
For me, ironically, I didn't die very often to, like, any of the monsters or anything. I kept dying because I kept digging around to get to the different places that were purple on the map. And just ran out of health because it's very hard to get health back. The heals don't recharge anywhere near fast enough for someone who's as bad as I am at this.
Well, the good thing is there are accessibility options in the game that do not affect achievements, do not affect progression. Tell us about some of the accessibility options and the ways that you've made the game more acceptable and embracing for newer players.
Yeah, so like you said, you can up your health right from the get-go. You can, it's been a while since I've looked at it, but up your damage output as well. Increase the time that you can spend in that little kind of slow-mo
section when you're running. By the way.
So when you right-click... Oh, I forget. You guys are all on, like, Xbox, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, we're console plebs.
Okay. So I'm trying to think of how it works with the controller. But whatever button you use to get onto the wall, you hold that, and that'll slow down time as you're going around, and that allows you to aim as well. To be more precise. To be fair to you, like, the wall running is, like, whenever I watch people play is like the thing that I see people struggle with the most. So don't feel bad if it takes you a bit to get used to it. It is strange, but
yes, I'm not the only one who sucks. Fuck yeah.
I'm sure Jacob sucks at it too, right, Jacob?
Well, he sucks at everything.
Yeah.
I was not particularly good at this game, so I just muted my mic for the interview.
I didn't care if I was good at it. I was having fun. And like my last end run screen before the show, I got one at the bottom. I don't know, maybe this is there every time, but it said puns made. And it started this like long random count of numbers, and then it just settled on too many. And I was like, oh, was it listening to me?
It knows.
Yeah, that's the same every time, but you're guaranteed to get a lot of puns whenever you play.
I'm all for the puns.
So what made you go with teeth?
But so the game came from a game jam, and the initial idea for that was like you were a little guy with just a bullet sticking out of your head. And so to kind of get things to make sense why there's a bullet in your head, I turned it into a tooth, and then you're a gummy with a tooth. and so like I do tend to lean towards like the gross looking art style because I'm kind of bad at art. And so when I can mask it in kind of a grungy looking dirty atmosphere, like it kind of hides my mistakes. So,
well, it certainly looks deliberate. I mean, it's got everything. It's got a great look and everything really stands out. Everything. It's not over designed. Like everything really, the bullets, it's never confusing. What's an enemy. Everything has a nice, everything's, you know, definitely, it's an easy game to look at, even though it's frickin' teeth and gums and whatnot. I gotta go back. So you're a gummy throwing a tooth around and then collecting the tooth, but you were a guy taking a bullet out of your head and throwing the bullet at people? Is that what you're saying? You were a one bullet guy?
Yeah. Initially, yeah. That's interesting. That was the premise. But.
Gotcha.
How long ago was the game jam? When did this game begin its life?
It's probably coming on 5 years now.
Mm.
So I worked on the game so last March was when it officially left early access.
Oh hey, it launched March 18th. That's my birthday. Nice.
Hey, nice.
There you go.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess it's been about four to 5 years that I've been working on it. So
how many people are involved?
Just me and the sound and audio guy.
You and Ben, that's it. Wow. That's impressive.
Yep.
So you are the entirety of Space, my friend.
Yep. I usually don't have an audio guy with me either, but this one was like, if I hadn't hired him, I would probably still be working on this game. Didn't want that to happen.
So how did the game end up coming to console?
John Dusoff, they reached out to me and seemed like a good fit. So and they were eager to do it. So yeah, I just left it in their hands. They did all the work for porting it and
very cool.
Yeah. Easy process working with them. Thumbs up.
Life. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the only thing is like everybody I seem to work with is in the opposite side of the world as me. So it's like, I'm waking up as they're going to bed, and it's just like this quick period in the morning where I can send a couple emails to them or respond to emails, and it's just, it was kind of a mess, but you learn to work around that stuff.
Oh, yeah, I know the feeling with that one. We've done our fair share of interviews that have been at like 4 in the morning, or at least I have. I know, I don't know what these yokels have done, but where are you located? Where is space, my friend, centered around the galaxy?
I live in Wisconsin.
Oh, cool.
Middle of Wisconsin.
Is there game jam stuff in Wisconsin, or did you go somewhere else for that?
This was just an online deal. Cool. The engine that I use, Game Maker Studio, there's a number of game jams that take place just using that, and so.
Is this Game Maker?
It is.
Oh, rad. That's awesome.
Grant, do you mess around with Game Maker at all?
No, I've always kind of wanted to just on my own. I've worked in just with audio stuff in Unreal and Unity, but I've never spent any time with Game Maker. I have some friends that have built some tools for it, and some great games have been made with it. But no, I haven't ever played with it myself.
I need to get dabbling with Game Maker. Like, I keep joking around that we need to have an SML platformer, just like me collecting pancakes and rescuing cats.
Oh, that's hot. I like it. Let's go.
And Grant, you got to do the music.
Sure. I'm already playing guitar. You can't hear it because of Discord, but I'm already writing the music. Let's go. Let's do it.
And now we just need a developer.
Jacob can do VO. Got to have the...
Oh, no. Norg's doing the voiceover.
Okay.
Oh.
Well, then...
Okay. Norg and Jacob could do voiceover.
If Jacob can sing whatever song I write, because it's going to have vocals, because, you know... Has to happen anyway, and we'll do it again.
So, Grant, what do you think of the music in Cavity? But like you said, you were a fan of the audio work. What are your thoughts on everything audio wise in the game?
It's great. It's absolutely great. I it's really like I don't know. As soon as you start smashing fruit, things get visceral. Things get smushy and tactile. But it's like this kind of combination of that, the organic kind of Foley stuff, and then more video gamey sounds, something you might expect. And it fits the art style really well. Which is a combination of organic and video gamey, you know what I mean? And the music's rad. Like, it's just really super cool music. Has the right vibe, in my opinion, but it isn't predictable at all. You know, really, really good stuff. How'd you meet up with Ben in your work on this?
Yeah, he reached out to me again, and he saw it on Twitter, and he sent me like a kind of a demo of what he imagined for the game as kind of like a, I don't know, like an application, I guess, like a job resume. Totally. And yeah, it was really good. And he was like, that was the first time anybody's ever done that for me. And so we decided to work. He liked the song he made, which unfortunately didn't get into the game, was actually him like brushing his thumb against his teeth and kind of like making that hollow clicking sound. Whoa. That makes
yeah,
like the percussion going on in the song is really good.
Very cool.
Is that available anywhere? I gotta hear that.
I looked for it the other day and I couldn't find it anymore. But
is the soundtrack for the game available anywhere?
Yeah, you can get it on Steam, and then I know he has it uploaded to a YouTube playlist.
Awesome.
Very cool. Bree, what kind of questions do you have about this game, or what kind of thoughts do you have about it?
I was going to say, like, I kind of feel like I got to like hear about some other people's experiences and see some other stuff that was going on with it. And I kind of liked that I felt like I could play in some different styles like and adapt to myself. And I really liked the kind of Zelda exploration kind of vibe to it. Like Augie was saying about like digging through the walls and stuff like that and kind of how the map evolves like that. I was really enjoying that aspect of it as well. So I kind of felt like I could do different things besides just like the twin stick kind of stuff, and I could adapt my play accordingly until I got a hang of the like neat controls with the wall running and the teleporting and stuff. So I liked that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that's part of like the accessibility to it is like, you know, not everybody is going to have a good time going against hundreds of bullets. And it's just like nice to kind of have this little chill side thing that you don't have to dig through the walls at all. Like that's not required at all, but it is like a fun little exploration thing. There's tons of little secrets you can find by digging. And yeah.
If you had infinite dig usages, are the maps endless, or do they have like invisible wall barriers that you would eventually get to?
Yeah, it does eventually have a stopping point, but initially you could dig endlessly, but that was just people would get overpowered on the first run and then just squash the game, which is fun, but gotta help them see at least some of the content.
What is some of the crazier content in the game? We've only just got our hands on to the game, so we're still very early in our runs with it. What's some of the crazy shit waiting for us later in the game?
You want me to spoil?
Sure. I want to hear some good stuff. Right. I want to hear some dirt.
Yeah. Well, there's a boss fight that is like Metal Gear Solid inspired.
Oh yeah.
I guess not the boss fight itself, but like you go into a room and a box falls from the ceiling, and it's like the little, you know, the box that Snake gets into and that he sneaks around in, and then it comes off and you have like a little eye patch and a little bandana on, and yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Brad.
I just found a secret. It's not a secret, but I was playing while we were talking, and I just found a cool item. It's called an explosive butt. I'm very excited.
I'm sorry, what? Can you say
it's
that
called
again?
An explosive butt.
Oh, okay.
Jacob, what do you know about explosive butt?
I was going to say, finally, my time to shine. Somebody named something in a game after me.
Took this long for a cameo. I'm proud of you.
What a surprise. Thank you all.
So, Bree, what is the explosive butt? What does it do?
I think it's some kind of like grenade. I'm sorry, I didn't continue reading because we were all laughing, and then I saw that there was a sticky toy called a crappy toy, which goes really good with the, you know, explosive butt. But yeah, and then I wanted to know what that was, but then you asked me questions and I got distracted. And I just finished the second bottle, so I don't think I can hold a thought in my head for very long at this point.
Yeah, that's good.
Y'all suck.
Jacob, what do you want to say about butts then? Come on.
What? No, I got... Sir, what can I say that Sir Mix-a-Lot hasn't already?
Oh, man. So when you're not working on games, when you're not developing games, what are you playing? What kind of games do you enjoy playing? What's been on your radar lately?
These days, I've been playing... a game called The Void Reigns Upon Her Heart.
Really?
That is an excellent, excellent bullet hell. Like, and I suggest this game to like anybody who's like afraid of bullet hells, because it has such like a smooth progression through it. It's just like, it's insane how you can just tailor the whole game to what you want to face. It's like, if you want to face insane amount of bullets, like, you can, but if you just want to like chill time, it's like, yeah, it's so good. I keep coming back to that one because it's just,
that looks really cool. I haven't heard of that one before. It looks really nice.
Yeah, highly suggest that one. It's really good.
Yeah, I stumbled across your one of your older games. Is, I don't know how you pronounce it, Room, Rheum. I'm like, oh, yep. I see. Cause you know, I played I'm playing a Cavity, and I'm like, you know, this is a twin stick shooter. And then the lines of bullets show up, and I'm like, oh, I see. And though, so I'm back here looking at Room, and I get it. I see, it's a bullet hell game, but you're coming from top to bottom, instead of bottom to top or left, yeah, to right or whatever. But looks really cool. I'm gonna have to check this one out as well. You're obviously a bullet hell junkie. Yeah, this looks rad.
It's a easy genre to start off in when you're making games. I think it's like it's like the simplest definition of fun in a game, I think, is just like shoot bullet and and something happens. So that was kind of why that all happened. And yeah.
This is great. I'm trying to remember this. There's a bullet hell game that I played on my... It eventually got ported to Switch, but I played it on my iPad a while back. It's like a series of... Oh, I should have started talking because I can't remember the name of the game. With like a djent soundtrack, like a tech metal soundtrack. It was a series. I think there's been three of them. There are so many bullet hells, you probably won't know what I'm talking about. But anyway, the only bullet hell game...
I have the djent soundtrack threw me off. I have no idea.
Yeah, I'll have to figure it out. I'll figure it out before before we're done here, I'll figure it out. The most bullet hell I've really spent time with is Ikaruga. That was like my, you know, buy the DVD of the pro runs level of infatuation was Ikaruga. Didn't go much further past that. You know, I don't know. I've played the occasional one, but I know it's just, it's a whole thing. And they're a lot of fun. I assume you've played Ikaruga.
Yeah. I've not actually played Ikaruga.
I love the fact that you're such a bullet hell freak, but you haven't played that. That is fantastic. It's like Ikaruga isn't the main one. That's incredible.
Yeah, I haven't played a lot of games. Ever since I started making games, like playing games has become a rarity these days. So.
But yeah, that can happen. That's all right.
So tell us a bit about City Limits. I see this game on Steam. What's this one about?
Yeah, so that was my attempt to not make a gross bullet hell game.
I'm going to say, stylistically, it looks significantly different.
Yeah. Yeah, that one is just a simple little puzzle city builder. And I made that one in like a month, I think. And so it's very small, but yeah, it was kind of a nice palate cleanser after Cavity Busters. And
yeah, so this is more recent. Yeah, this came out in August, so this is actually after you built the main game, and then you know the guys ported this over to console for this release. This doesn't have teeth in it. It doesn't look like.
I did get there is teeth in there. There's a rare chance for.
Of course
teeth.
There is. Of course there is. Rare chance for teeth. Gotta write that down, Joe.
I feel like that's a good episode title.
Yeah, chance for teeth. I'm writing it down.
Yeah, they can't all be gummers.
Oh, I found the name of the game. I'm sorry. It's Danmaku Unlimited. Are you familiar with Danmaku, perhaps?
It sounds familiar.
It's a bullet hell game with a really sweet tech metal soundtrack.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic. Throwing that in chat.
Oh yes, the Taho series. Yes, is that correct?
Toho or Tohu or whatever it is. I see so many.
Toho. That and one of the little challenges I found in a room recently on this run.
Would you run into Brie?
Oh, there was like a little challenge room I found with some little bullet-looking guy, and he wanted me to like do the stuff in a certain time period without rolling and dodging. Like it was kind of referencing other games, and like no, do it right. So, and I think it referenced like the Tohu or however you pronounce it series. It was cute.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh man. Oh, so what are you working on next? What is in the future for space, my friend?
So I'm working on a more traditional turn-based roguelike. It's the working title I have is Bubblegum Fisticuffs.
That's a good name.
So
it's pretty good.
It's it's a bit more colorful, and it's kind of a more traditional pixel art looking, and it's a bit more strategy and yeah, it's something new, something a little quite different from what I'm used to working on. So yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. It's kind of currently it's nice and punchy, and yeah, it's a good time.
Cool.
Is that going to be just on PC, or are you looking into possibly bringing that to console as well?
Yeah, we'll see. I would like to. I kind of the way I have everything designed currently, I'm planning for controller use and all that. So if that works out, I would like to bring it to consoles. And yeah,
nice. That'd be awesome. I know we've been chatting for a while about the game. Is there anything you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
How long have you guys been doing this?
10 years.
Hey, Joe, how long have you been doing this?
10 goddamn years.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah, we've this is going to be episode 866. So we've been going for quite a while of varying lengths, depending on who my co-hosts are for the episode. Grant has been doing music for us for, I think, 9 of those 10 years.
Wow.
So,
that's awesome.
If you ever need music in a game, Grant is the guy to hit up.
Right, I tend to eat the fruit I buy, but I don't have to, necessarily. No. I just play. Never tried using a banana as a guitar slide, but maybe I should try one day.
Do it.
Wow. Yeah, it has been a long time, hasn't it?
That's amazing. I always admire people who can fill time just chatting like this. It's very cool.
Yeah, we've...
I obviously don't have that ability.
We could do that. We could fill that time. Not efficiently, but we can do it.
Speak for yourself. I can be very efficient.
All I am is efficient.
You're a pain in the ass.
Well, yeah, but I'm efficient at it.
She is. She does go from like 0 to 100 really quick on being a pain in the ass.
I was thinking of saying being efficient. Oh, that's great.
No, she's efficient at being a pain in the ass.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I understand.
She's very good.
Oh, you know, games keep changing, right? Games, they keep changing, and it keeps giving you new things to talk about. So
yeah,
that makes it easier. You know, games are fun.
That's true.
And that's good getting new people on to chat with us. So always fun having people on, whether it's their first time on the show or like Grant, and it's like his 25th time on the show, something like
that. I don't know. Something happened, and all of a sudden I had an especially good run here in the last year.
Yeah.
Jacob and Aki's lament. They're like, oh, fuck, he's fucking back again. Okay, fine. But no, it's always fun to chat with y'all. It's good stuff. So this game's coming to Xbox. It's on Xbox. Is it coming to other systems too, or is it already on other
everything?
Systems? I didn't check. It is? Okay, right on. Good job,
Tim. Is it on Dreamcast?
Yep, on everything.
He's going to say yes.
Unfortunately, not.
Oh. Well, then, see, it's not on everything.
On everything current, smartass.
Yeah, Carnage is asking.
Well, I mean, the Dreamcast is technically currently garbage, so.
Hey. Dreamcast is a great system.
Ouch.
Boo her.
Boo. Boo Aki.
I'm pretty sure Carnage says engage at least once an episode. Is that right?
Probably.
I think he's requested. So consider that an official request.
Yeah,
for the engage.
The engage port on of Cavity Busters. Yeah. Throw down the Tiger R Zone while we're at it. What else? CDI. what other terrible obscure systems do we put this thing on?
Can we put it on tape and put it on a ColecoVision?
Ooh, there you go.
Can we play Doom on it?
Yeah, there you go. We can probably actually play Doom on a Dreamcast controller at this point. Like, you know, the little window on it.
They did
play Doom on it. Did they?
Oh, wow.
Let's see. Doom on VMU. Oh, here we go.
Doom on VMU. Just immediately. There it is.
Unbelievable.
Yep, somebody did it. Pocket Station Doom.
There you go.
That's beautiful. That's awesome. Oh, man. Well, Adrian, we got to move on with the show. We have a lot of news and reviews to discuss. Did you want to hang out and chat news with us, or did you want to hop off?
Yeah, I got to go and get some dinner in me. So,
all right, well, tell us, where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing, and how can people follow you and all that good stuff?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter, Space My Friend. I'm there sometimes. It's kind of less and less these days, but whatever. But yeah, that's usually where you'll find me.
Yeah, well, Adrian, thank you so much for coming on, chatting with us. The game is Cavity Busters. It is out now. It is $9.99, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, on sale, and then it'll go up to $12.50, which is a weird price, but the port people said it, so whatever.
$10 is a steal for this game. This is I'm excited to get back in and go in deeper.
Yeah, same.
Turning it up.
Yeah. Yeah, have fun, you guys.
Cool. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And you have yourself a wonderful night.
Yep. Yep, you too.
Cheers.
Good night.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
So how's everyone feeling? Everyone feeling good?
I'm a little looser than I was.
Totally.
Jacob, you need to smoke more?
Huh?
I said, Jacob,
that's a yes.
You need to smoke more.
No.
Why?
Because I don't. And only losers use drugs.
Yeah, winners drink alcohol.
You could have done that any better. Winners drink alcohol.
Oh, man. Bree, what are you drinking?
Well, let's see. I was finishing old bottles of mead. So I started out. Yeah, I started out with a cherry vanilla mead, and ooh, that was about half a bottle, and that was what I pre-gamed with. That was from 2014. It was an old one. It was very good.
Mead from 2014?
Yes. If mead is done properly, it actually gets smoother as it ages. Ideally, you have like a 6-year window before something is like really at that perfect prime point. And I probably opened that 3 years ago, and I'm just now finishing it. And I had opened it for a special occasion thing because it's made by a friend of mine. I'm a brewer, and I have a bunch of other friends who are brewers as well, so we trade bottles. And then I had a bottle of blackberry, I would say like mid-sweet mead. And now I am on a cranberry and clove wine that was made by the same friend who made the cherry vanilla.
Man, I'm in.
Right?
Let's go. I just feel like the McMead, you think of there's OG mead, and then there's the mead you might get out of the can at the Ren Fair. Like, I don't know. There's different well, levels.
So, and I'm a historic reenactor. So okay. That's part of what I do is I do historic brewing and then, you know, hobby brewing alongside that. So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm game.
Yeah, the cherry vanilla is
definitely high test.
Yeah, what are we talking percent wise?
It depends on who you ask. So I don't use a hydrometer to test specific gravity because I tend to do things the most medieval way possible. So I take a fresh egg from my chicken, I clean off the bloom, and then I float it in a narrow vessel filled with the alcohol. And depending on how high it rises, that's how alcoholic it is. So yeah, I don't know percentage for you off the top of my head. Sorry.
There is this so what Technobabble is like for this is, I was Star just Trek like, fans?
Like, there were so many things said that made my brain stop.
She could have lied the whole time, and I would have no idea. Like, oh, yeah, true. No. I totally use eggs for that, too. Yeah. Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
Jacob's like, you had me at narrow vessel. You know what I mean? No, yeah, I don't know.
I can tell you just even by taste sometimes if like or mouthfeel how something is a bit more in a percentage, but there tends to be a certain like almost pasteurization process, which is not what happens. But like as far as commercial stuff in that vein, don't tend to be higher content. But really, it just depends on like a lot of different factors how high you can get it to begin with. Mead is not typically known for being necessarily like high test, but I mean, you can definitely get it there if you know what you're doing. So,
okay. Totally. Can you UPS bottles of these things, or does that?
I wish.
Does that go against? Does that go against like reenactment?
Yeah, without certain licenses and stuff. Yeah, I can't even legally sell it. I can only trade it for specified monetary donations toward the purchase of future supplies. I might have said that a few too many times.
Oh, okay.
So we have to visit you with like bushels of fruit to trade.
So I'll tell you what though, like if we ever meet in person, I pretty much like walk up with bottles of stuff. So like my typical thing, I make the cranberry wine as well. And one of the things I make is actually a cooking wine. I make habanero cooking wine. It is absolutely great for deglazing a pan, making some fajitas, a steak, or playing horrifying practical jokes on your friends and people who live with you who aren't paying attention, and you're just going to let them just live with their decision because they were not paying attention and they deserve that.
I love that idea.
You're evil. Well, Lady McGree wants you to go to the forest and forage with her.
Dude, let's go. I love hiking. Yep. I love foraging. True story.
What's up, baby? You want to forage for some berries?
Let's go. Dude, there's this. So much wild garlic chive around here. We could make a fabulous dinner. I know where the good mushrooms are. Let's go.
I don't know what you're selling, but you're selling it. You know what I mean? Like, that's fine. I like it. I'm in. So at first I was like, let's all meet up. But now I don't know if I'm going to be the one that's the butt of the practical joke. I don't know. If I act interested enough, maybe I'll get the high test. Yeah, probably.
Magfest next year. Let's all do it.
Let's do it.
Party room.
Man.
What do you think, Grant Yin?
Sure. Yes.
Or are 100%. You performing?
Doesn't matter.
Did you apply?
Doesn't matter.
Did you apply?
I just played. I just played the mag.
So. I know you did, but did you apply for next year?
I might be in an application that for a band that is applied to MAG, but I don't know.
Only Rolling Stars.
I'm just applied for every band.
Oh, okay,
we'll see what happens.
Everyone who fills out the band form is like additional members stemage.
Oh, by the way, yeah, Grant might be here. I don't know. He shows, I don't know.
He's probably going to play a song with us. Who knows?
Yeah, I'll get a gig with the Dairy String Quartet, and I'll have to like learn to play the. I'll have to buy a harp. I don't know.
The string quartet and you.
Quintet.
Yeah. They always have, you know, someone over there, you know, hitting the bongos at a specially good time.
Has Yusuf ever played with them? Just going ape shit on the drums while.
No, but I would love to.
With just peaceful harp music playing in the background and just crazy drum action. I would.
Sounds like a gig idea. Sounds like another application needs to get submitted.
Oh, shit. Should we get to news? There's some news we got to discuss.
Totally.
Thanks, Aki. You really sold that transition. Totally.
Totally.
Game Pass.
More mellow.
Game Pass. We got a lot of games coming to Game Pass this week. On Tuesday, we got Minecraft Legends.
Oh.
Yippee.
Yeah, the new Minecraft.
Oh, that's the new one. That's not... Yep. What am I thinking of?
Brand new one. It's like a tactical tower defense style, strategy-ish kind of game. Looks pretty cool, and it's on Game Pass, so try it out.
And it's what was the other one? Minecraft.
Was Dungeons the other one?
Yeah, Dungeons was the hack and slash.
Yeah, I like that Dungeons. Was pretty fun.
Yeah, that was a good one. I like that one.
Yeah, that one was solid. So I'm thinking Legends will be pretty good. We'll find out next week officially. But April 20th, that is today. What? 420? Did someone know about that?
No,
nothing.
Nope.
Two games hit Game Pass today with Medieval Dynasty on the Xbox One and Coffee Talk Episode 2, Hibiscus and Butterfly.
I'm excited about that one.
Hibiscus Boogaloo.
Tomorrow, Homestead Arcana is going to be launching straight to Game Pass.
That looks like that might be good. I haven't quite decided if that one looks like something for me or not.
Well, it'll be on Game Pass, so you could try it.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, next week on the 26th, Cassette Beasts is joining PC Game Pass. And then on the 27th, The Last Case of Benedict Fox is launching on Game Pass.
And that I am interested in.
Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle Special Edition is launching on Game Pass.
That was a weird one for me.
Why?
I don't think I've heard much about Blaze Blue since like 360 era, so I was a little confused.
Well, there was I think it was Chrono Phantasma on the Xbox One.
Oh, maybe.
And then I think a few more may have come out on PlayStation, but yeah, it's finally coming back. Good stuff. And then May 2nd, Redfall will be launching on Game Pass.
Yay. 30 frames
that
per second.
I am definitely.
Does that bother you, 30 frames per second?
I mean, I'll play a game 30 frames per second. I just, you know, if I own the best console, well, one of the two, I just would expect. I mean, granted, you know, Microsoft threw their money over there and all of a sudden they're like, oh, by the way, you're making this for Xbox and here's where we are. They'll figure it out. But yeah. I always go for performance mode. I always like the smoothest game possible. And I have so many friends that are like, I can't see the difference. And I'm not, I mean, I first time I booted up the Mario and Rabbids, I'm like, whoa, that's 30. I guess I can see it. I don't know what it is, but I can tell, you know, and it's fine. It's just kind of, you know, Atomic Heart was 60. If Atomic Heart can be 60, I feel like Redfall can. And again, they'll get there. But
I'm hoping Redfall works better than Atomic Heart, though.
Yeah.
I like Atomic Heart. It's a fucking mess.
Yeah. But as far as fidelity goes, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
I can't tell the difference between 25 and like 120 even, so it's all the same.
Is that why you needed the nursing home?
I didn't hear the razz.
I heard the crickets.
I asked, is that why you always date over at the nursing home?
She can't tell the difference between 25 and 120.
Oh no. My soul. Oh, why? I need more alcohol.
Yep. I just drank some for you. It's fine.
It's not all good news, though. There are games leaving Game Pass.
Ooh, what's leaving? I didn't see the leaving news.
Yeah, we've got five games leaving Game Pass. We are losing Bugsnax. This one's a sad one. Tetris Effect Connected is leaving. Destroy All Humans, Unsold, and Dragon Quest Builders 2.
I swear Bugsnax just got here.
Yeah, I think that was like, only like probably, a 6 month one, or maybe
was this? Oh, maybe no, definitely not a year. Like maybe 6 months. Nine yeah, months. It feels like a short one.
Yeah,
but you know that can happen.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's not a huge game, so. And if people are interested, they could always buy it and save a couple of bucks with the Game Pass discount. Yay! Halo franchise director Frank O'Connor has moved on from Microsoft after over 20 years. Yeah, and then Mark Healy, director of Dreams and Little Big Planet, as well as the co-founder of Media Molecule, has left the studio.
Wow, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Co-founder, huh? Was it him and like one other guy?
Or, I think so.
Interesting. Have they done much since Dreams?
I don't think they've done just... I think it's just Dreams they've been working on. I don't know if they have anything new. But yeah, obviously it's on PlayStation, so I don't follow it as much, but... Speaking of Sony, they acquired Firewalk Studios. There were no hearings or petitions to stop it. It just happened. It's crazy how things just announce an acquisition and it happens.
And they did what?
Nothing. Nothing yet. Their new studio.
Wait, no. Oh, they said they acquired them, so I assume they had done something.
Nope, they are working on their first game, which is a PlayStation exclusive.
Okay. Maybe it's a good one.
Let's hope so. Focus Entertainment acquired Dovetail Games.
What like has Dovetail Fishing.
Fishing, okay. Hunting, stuff like that. Epic acquired Aquarius Studio. I don't know how they say their name.
I like Aquarius Studios. Let's go with that.
Of course, Aki. And then Atari acquired a bunch of games from the 80s and 90s, including Bubsy.
That came up today at work.
Yeah.
yeah. Interesting. Yeah,
good old Bubsy. Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
You don't know Bubsy?
Aki, you should go watch the TV pilot.
My man. Yes, you should.
You should watch that. You know, it'll give you a really good idea of like everything wonderful about Bubsy.
I think the voice of Bubsy in that cartoon is actually the voice from Yakko Wakko. Like he was that. I can't remember his name.
Rob Paulsen.
That's him. Yeah, he did the just for the pilot though.
Oh, that's because there only is the pilot.
Yeah, exactly. Which I don't think actually aired anywhere, but it's there. It exists. Anyway.
Okie dokie then.
You can find it
on YouTube, by the way.
Speaking of games from the 80s and 90s, new games were added to the Nintendo Switch Online lineup for the Genesis, where they added Street Fighter 2 Special Champion Edition, Pulse Man, Kid Chameleon, and Flicky.
What's Flicky? And, other than what Aki does.
Fair enough. Can't argue with that.
I really don't know. I wasn't a Genesis kid growing up, so I don't know what Flicky is.
I don't know Flicky. I know Kid Chameleon. It was one of those that people just ended up with. But I don't know the other ones.
Let's see what else is here. Speaking of Sega, there were huge rumors going around that they were going to buy Rovio for $1 billion. And then Sega heavily denied those rumors, and then they confirmed that they bought them for $775 million.
I thought it was $776, but
whatever.
But I do appreciate. No, we didn't buy it for $1 billion.
We got a better deal.
$750 million. You know, way better for a brand that nobody gives a shit about.
Yeah, No, go ahead.
I'm just looking at the Rovio site to see if they've done anything other than Angry Birds. And
no,
I don't think they have.
Dark Fire Heroes, Small Town Murders.
So you committed Blast. Small Town Murders?
Yeah. Oh, there's a whole section of their website devoted to Beyond Birds because it's like they've made like every every Angry Birds game. Okay. I just was curious if there was a reason to get them other than, so Angry Sonic is coming.
Yes. Thank God.
Okay. All right. He's really mad.
I'm not going to lie. I like, now that you say that, I'm just like, huh, that could actually be pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. Diablo 4 has gone gold. So that's cool.
Nice.
I am very excited for that one.
Did you play the little, what was it, the beta?
Yes. I got up to level 20 so I could get my wolf pup in the full game.
You like it?
It was crashing a lot. Yeah. I had a lot of issues where I would level up and then the game would be like, disconnected. Thanks, game. You're making it a pain in the ass to get to level 20, but I made it.
Did you like it other than that?
It was fun. It's Diablo.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Last bit of news I have is some very sad news for all of us. Two games were delisted from the Xbox store this past week that caught the world by surprise.
Oh my.
That is being One Step After Fall Espanol and One Step After Fall Dutch Edition.
Not only are they pulled from the Xbox so you can't buy it, from what I understand, it was even removed from people who had already bought it. It was
yes,
removed from
reports
their stuff.
Are that the game has been removed from the players' libraries. And if people go to Xbox support, they could get refunds for their purchases. Meanwhile, people are harassing us on Twitter because we're solely responsible for pulling games on Xbox, apparently. I didn't know I had that power.
Kind of power.
I didn't know I had that kind of power. So, Winx Club, you're next, motherfucker.
Hey, leave Winx Club alone, Dan.
Okay, Winx Club
is
getting
the power to remove.
Stay.
Can you bring things back?
Yeah, there you go.
I've got a list.
Oh, I've got a list too. Starting with Rock Band DLC. No.
Fuser. Can we get Fuser fixed? And let's see. Gears Pop. I'd like to finish those two. Thanks.
Gears Joe, are you making a list? I would like to get the Smash TV for 360 that was online enabled by default. That was a pretty good. Can you do that? Can you like?
I wish.
After the pop game, can you make that?
Yeah, happen? Yeah. I'm writing these down. It's right below Rare Chance for Teeth.
Yeah.
So yeah, those games have been pulled, and people honestly think that we have the power to do that because I just tweeted to Chris Charla and was like, "Hey, this is kind of dumb," and they agreed. So yeah,
I've got
the touch. I've got the power. Yeah.
My hope is honestly that they change some verbiage and it will prevent things like that from happening in the future.
Yeah, hopefully.
Language stacks should not exist. People are like, "Oh, why do you hate stacks?" I don't necessarily hate stacks. If you want to get a Windows stack and a console and Series X, whatever, they're stupid, but it is what it is. You should not be charging for a language. That is bullshit.
I don't think there should be stacks, personally. I think all of them should just be, you know, connected to each other so that you can play it anywhere. Would be nice.
Play anywhere system is definitely what they were trying to pitch, but they can't force these developers to do that if they can see a way to turn a quick buck. So, yep.
But, you know, if you want to do your stacks, I can understand it, but language stacks should not exist. That should not be a thing that is on our platform. It should not be on any platform. Language options should be in the base game, and that's it. Like, if you're charging for a voice patch, that's one thing. But these were games that had English voiceovers, and all they did was change the subtitles. That's not acceptable. But it is what it is. Anyone have thoughts on those games getting pulled?
I've already forgotten what they were.
Yeah. I mean, Joe, like, Joe, you know, after all is said and done, you know, you've never walked, you've never run, you're a winner. That's all I'm saying.
Totally.
I'm just quoting The Touch, but I was trying to keep
that
going.
It's a shame that people are losing access to their content, you know, if they decided to purchase it. That part is unfortunate.
Yeah.
I don't think that was the right answer in this situation, but I do understand some of the things around that and why it could cause certain problems and encourage some questionable behavior on the service. So, I don't know. Hopefully they'll resolve that aspect of it better in the future if they run across other things like this. And again, I hope that they've changed, you know, what is written in the rules of what you can and can't do so that it'll stop future things like that from happening, where we get these kinds of stacks that are just these really.
It's gamer score abuse. Yeah. And they're just taking advantage of addiction at that point.
Yeah. Well, and that could be sued against for gambling, you know, and, you know, like people sue for gambling and stuff like that. People could sue for addiction. Like, I mean, that's a very valid point that could come down the pike later if things like that aren't addressed. So,
yeah, but that's the news I have. Anyone else have any news to talk about?
I'm pretty sure I did at one point, but I don't remember it anymore. So
proud of you.
Yeah.
Alcohol's I do good. Have one thing.
Do tell.
All right. Well, earlier today, I think it was, or maybe it was yesterday. It was yesterday. There was some notice. I know this is like Twitter news again. It's all the Twitter drama. But Xbox, Microsoft is dropping Twitter from its advertising platform in a few days because they do not like the new fees associated with the API access. It would be in the realm of $42,000 a month for them. So we will no longer be seeing Microsoft and Xbox advertising potentially on Twitter.
I don't blame them at all. Apparently, they're increasing the price to company checkmark systems too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like $1,000 a month or some shit for the gold checkmark for verified companies. And I'm like, yeah, that's not going to go fucking anywhere, yeah.
Yeah, but if you go to the Microsoft webpage, they do say that they will still continue to be using social media channels such as Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn for their advertising purposes. So there you go.
So they're not using it at all. They're not just removing advertising. Like, they're just not going to use it.
I think that they will probably do whatever they can do for free, but they are not going to be using it for advertising purposes and pay those fees.
Wow.
Good.
I mean, fair enough.
That's what made me stop reading it. They kill API access, and it killed my Flamingo app, and I was like, oh.
Well, and it's going to kill a lot of things that I think people aren't realizing, and that's coming in 5 days. So other API things that are linked, like, you know, a lot of Xbox people are fond of True Achievements and the fun social connections. I don't know what they're doing yet either. But
I know it's going to play hell for me personally, because I do all the posting and stuff. IGT and it automatically gets posted to Twitter, so I don't have to really do it on Twitter, and now I'm gonna have to remember to do that.
That's an easy thing for me to be able to do, and I mean that's definitely a challenge for stuff like that.
Yeah, it's gonna blow, but you know, hey, it is what it is. He's an idiot, so.
Yeah, we're getting more requests in chat for games to bring back, like bring back Scalebound.
You got this, Joe.
I mean, Scalebound has apparently been in the talks of a revival.
It'd be nice to see that one come back. I was hyped for that one and hoped for it.
I was super for it. It's like dragons. Who the fuck doesn't want a game with dragons in it? Come on now.
Jacob, any news on your end?
The only news I have is some Sonic movie watch.
Oh, good. Sonic shit. What is it?
That might be a weird segue.
Knuckles has started filming.
Whoa, really?
Cool. Yep. Idris Elba still playing him?
I would assume so, yeah.
Then that's all I need to know. I'll watch it.
Yeah, it'll be exclusive to Paramount Plus. It's going to be like a mini series.
Okay, I probably won't watch it then.
I have an important question I might regret.
You okay. definitely will. Go
Why
ahead.
Why should I watch the Sonic movie?
Because it's
actually well done. Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised because I thought it was going to be garbage, and I actually really enjoyed it.
All right. Well, that's good.
Do you have any interest in the Mario Jam?
Eventually.
I'll get around to watching it eventually. I still need to watch the Dungeons & Dragons movie.
It's so awesome. Like, it's so good. I will watch it. I will rent it day one to show my family. Like, it's
Mario or Dungeons and Dragons?
Dungeons and Dragons. Okay. Like, I saw Mario 2, and I actually saw it twice. Long story. Saw it with people, and then I went back and saw it in 3D by myself because I had a coupon.
Hold on. Quick question.
Bring it.
3D, is it worth it?
I find 3D always best for animated movies. Like, you can watch a Marvel movie in 3D, but it's just sort of, it's like particle porn. I will tell you, the credits, the detail, you know, you can do a lot of things with cameras and you know, in 3D. Obviously, you can't when you're filming a picture and have to like retrofit it for 3D. It's very good in 3D. And that is something you would only see in the theater.
Yeah.
That's why I went back. I saw it on that Friday or Saturday, and then I went back on Monday and saw it for you know, under $10 in 3D. And it was a joy. So,
okay. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So. As you were.
Dungeons and Dragons is freaking sick, man. No, it's really good. Hilarious.
I've exciting. Only heard good things from just about everybody. The only people who don't seem to like it are the people a little too anal and into Dungeons and Dragons, the TTRPG, because they're like, this is not how that works, as though anyone fucking cares.
Well, and
they don't have the proper dice roll stats for the ogres in the game.
Exactly.
So I had like a hardcore old school D&D player in my house that went to go see it, and you know, without me, because that's how things work in my house. But he went with his parents, weirdly enough, and they had a grand time, and they didn't know near as much stuff. But he was like, the first D&D movie they made was like the producers got a hold of it, and they took what could have been this movie and ruined it. But this is people playing a D&D game, and it's exactly what you want it to be. It's got that level of humor of like the little things that happen, you know, like the meta of it, and then it's got the good stuff of like, you know, in the nitty-gritty of the game. It's like a really good balance in that, and it was very entertaining. So
yeah, everything I saw in commercials, it was always like, oh, this is like my table, this is all chaotic stupid, and I'm for that.
It's pretty chaotic. Yeah, it is chaotic stupid. It really is. I have some friends that are pretty deep D&D players, and they really liked it too. There are a lot of nods to locations and battles and things in the movie, and I'm like, they're just referencing it. I know it's a reference. I don't get it, but it does not detract from my enjoyment of it. But they said all that stuff was good too. So they checked a lot of boxes.
Supposedly there was also a nod to the cartoon series in there, like an alternate reality dungeon adventuring party kind of situation, which I'm like excited to see this entire scenario now just because of that, since it was brought up by Thimber there about the cartoon. Yeah.
I didn't even know there was a cartoon. Oh, great. I have
to watch. Cartoon is my favorite. I have the DVD box set. Oh my gosh. I grew up with that as a kid. That's just, it was awesome.
The only news I have is I did buy the old Super Mario Brothers movie on DVD, and it should be here on Monday.
That's nice. A fantastically terrible movie.
I haven't seen it in 20 years, and I'm excited to just kind of like make myself another cocktail and just drown in whatever that is, because I remember little. So, yeah. Anyway.
Nice.
Yeah.
Trying to hold that in.
I agree.
It's a good episode. I'm having
you're gonna
fun.
Survive.
No.
Okay.
That was the hand it back to Joe moment, and that's what we got. That was like the best timing in the world.
I thought you were going longer with that, and I had enough time to like recover from that cough. But anyway, should we get to reviews?
Sure.
We've
done the abyss. Of my gaping
Trivium
butthole.
Champ with the raid. Six people coming in from Trivium Champ. How is everyone doing from the raid? Triv, how are you doing? Good to see you in here. We are about to dive into some reviews. First game to talk about tonight is called Tron Identity, developed and published by Biffle Games, released April 11th on the Switch and PC for $14.99. Something has been taken. Enter a new grid and forge alliances via visual novel gameplay, uncovering truths through the identity disc puzzles. Make critical decisions and plot your own course in a world without a creator. Grant and Jacob, both of you played this one. Jacob, how about you start off? What is Tron Identity?
So Tron Identity is mostly a visual novel where you're playing this detective-like character named Query, and you're trying to find out why there was this explosion that happened at this building, and also like because stuff after said explosion, like stuff got taken from a vault. So you're there to find out like who caused the explosion, what was actually taken, because nobody else seems to know what it was either. You have to go through the building, talk to various people, go to different locations. And as you're talking to some of the people, what's happened to a lot of them is that they've lost their memories, and you can help restore their memories through this other mini game, which is a puzzle game where you're trying to replace cards that are near each other. I know I'm explaining it badly. And initially, like, the puzzles aren't bad, but it's just like they start making them more and more complicated as you progress through the game. And I understand that, like, yeah, it's for difficulty reasons and all that kind of stuff, but it's just, they, if anything, they just became an annoyance. Because honestly, like, the visual novel aspect is really good. And I do appreciate the fact that, like, you can actually skip the puzzles if need be, but then it's just like, well, then why even bother including them? We could just have a solid visual novel experience.
Jacob, did you? I just, about the puzzles. So did you play all the puzzles?
Not every single one. No.
Okay. I feel like I'm somewhat of a puzzle game guy. Like, I enjoy a card thing or a puzzle game. I had such a hard time wrapping my head around exactly what they were wanting me to do. And I eventually feel like I got it, but I skipped probably most of the puzzles in that game just to move. All right,
yeah. So there's a number at the bottom and it tells you how many moves that you're supposed to have left, or like the digits that the cards have on top. Like, that's like when you add them together, it's supposed to either equal that or be less than that. And so, like, let's say you got like 10 cards that have like a number that equals up to 23 right now, you somehow have to whittle it down to whatever numbers at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, it's like, I get it, but it's, I would just rather not have done the puzzles.
Yeah. I played the first couple and then, you know, I was so excited to see what memories you'd be restoring that I just was like, you know, I want to see this out, you know, and I totally skipped the back half of them, which maybe is not what they wanted me to do, but I'm glad they gave me that option.
Yeah.
I was just curious. I don't know if you liked them, but some people seem to really enjoy it. And there is an endless mode where you can just play that.
I mean, like, if it was like the first two puzzles and that was it, then I just would have been like, all right, yeah, that's fine. It gives me like a nice little break. But like the increasing like difficulty and rules, I mean, not even difficulty, it's just the increasing rules of like, oh, here's this kind of like tile or key, whatever you want to call it. Like, this can only do this. Like, no, just no.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So the game is $15. What do the two of you think of it? Is it a good experience? Do the puzzles ruin it? Is it worth checking out?
Personally, I don't think the puzzles ruin it at all. I mean, because you can skip them. It's a solid visual novel experience. Tron fans will really like it. I don't know if it's going to make like non-Tron fans be like, hell yeah, I'm going to check out the rest of the Tron verse, whatever you want to call it. But for $15, I'd really recommend it. Yeah.
Grant, what do you think?
I really liked it. I feel like it felt short.
Hey, kids.
Bithell's games have gotten they've gotten pretty good at this, at the visual novel thing. I played through Quarantine Circular and Subsurface Circular back on Switch, and this is just kind of an evolution of that, but with the Tron license, and they've created some new characters and they all fit, and I'm just the biggest Tron junkie in the world, so any excuse to see glowing edges, you know, on a bunch of black stuff with rain, I'm down. But so I don't know, like, it did feel abbreviated. It felt like it shows you as you play the decisions you've made and what kind of path you could have gone down. I mean, you know, and there are consequences. Let's just say people can die, you know, in this very short game. And there was a total oh fuck moment that I was like, oh, okay, I guess if I had a hand in that. But you know, but I liked it. And there's some couple little Easter eggy things you can explore around and read a little bit about. It talked a little bit about Ed Dillinger, who was in the original movie, was David Warner's character. He was like the head of NCOM, and talks about him a little bit. There's some like fun Tron stuff in there. Again, Jacob, I think I'm with you. I don't know if you're not a Tron guy, there's a lot of visual novels out there, but if you're a Tron guy, I think it's something that would be worth looking into. So I'm glad I played it. It does feel like episode, you know, one of two to me. But then again, I don't normally replay games. Like, there's other paths I could have chosen, and things may have shifted entirely. Jacob, do you know if there are multiple endings, like completely different endings?
That I don't know. I'm not sure. Wondering.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like Telltale, where you go on these different paths, but eventually it all comes to the same head, or if it really has like a whole lot of different endings for it. But
I mean, I honestly, like, if they want to make this like a series of games, like, I'm totally down for it.
Yeah, totally.
It says, one mystery, many endings. Your choices will determine the outcome you see with the protagonist that lets you take the reins and doesn't corner you into one approach.
Interesting. It's kind of like The Quarry, where I just watched a YouTube video of all the endings of The Quarry because I didn't have another 12 hours or whatever. I would totally play another one of these. So as a Tron fan, I really enjoyed it.
Nice.
Jacob, I don't know if you're a Tron junkie or not, but
I really like it. Yeah. I'm excited for the next movie whenever they finally decide to make it.
Yep.
Is there does anyone know of some good Tron music that could be talked about right now that could be hyped up and
unfamiliar?
I mean, yeah, Daft Punk has a totally solid album.
Oh, tell us about it. Grant, tell us about your Tron album.
Oh, I have a Tron album. Back before it was easy to license songs, I licensed the original soundtrack. I did a cover album of the original score from Tron, and in the style that it wore of whatever it is I do. So yeah, that thing's like 10, 12 years old at this point. I've been 10, maybe 10. I don't know. Do I need to make a 10 year anniversary of my Tron record album now? Hold on a second.
Probably. Let's see what,
I don't know. But no, I did a Tron album, and because that's my favorite movie soundtrack, Wendy Carlos, original Tron. I love the Daft Punk stuff, like 100%. And the Tron Pinball's great, and the universe has gone cool places, but the original movie is definitely my shit.
We're going to have to play some Tron music at the end of the show then. But moving on, next game to talk about is Inscription, developed by Daniel Mullins Games, published by Devolver Digital, released April 10th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and Windows 10 for $19.99. Inscription is an inky black card-based odyssey that blends the deck-building, roguelike, escape room-style puzzles and psychological horror into a blood-laced smoothie. Darker still are the secrets inscribed upon the cards. Bree, tell us about your time with Inscription.
And I first apologize how both of my reviews tonight are going to be just filled with rambling stories.
Ramble away.
So first of all, I want to say this guy named Subterfuge Dog saw me playing a game called Puss. And he thought that I might like this game called Pony Island. And that is how I ended up falling in love with the idea of Inscription, because Daniel Mullins also made Pony Island in a game called The Hex, which I've yet to play, but I am hunting down now. But as soon as look, the idea of deck building roguelite does not scream something I would like, but Daniel Mullins, yes, I need to play it. So I actually went and got Pony Island and played some of it for myself, because I'd only actually watched other people play it before, and I kind of just had this idea that there would be a similar mindset regarding puzzles and kind of other elements and even lore. And some other fans have told me that there might be some connected universe kind of stuff there, so not a bad idea to kind of go in that direction. I'm like catching my breath because I'm so excited. Also, there might be a theme of animals in my stuff tonight, and I'm really, really sorry.
That's fine.
Anyway, so the game starts out on the home screen of a simulated computer program, and if I hadn't played Pony Island, I might have missed the meaning behind the fact that we're not starting a new game. Our only option is to continue. It starts right in the card game with a figure in the shadows we can only identify as humanoid by voice and eyes. Granted, it's just there's not like a voice acted thing. It's just kind of like we see the subtitles of his narration. And our antagonistic narrator helps us understand that we're playing a game we might have forgotten, implying we've been here before and we will be in this chair again, as is the hallmark of the roguelike genre. We're going to upgrade, fight, die, and repeat. But first, we have to learn the rules of the game. And our game master does not seem eager at all to tell us everything, because he maybe wants to win. Or maybe it's just we're, in the tutorial. And as far as tutorials go, I didn't really feel like it was much of a tutorial. That's not a bad thing at all, because immersion level. super high in this game for me. The atmosphere is really creepy, and it's a key part of like the myth and mystery that is the whole first act of the game. I had to take a deep breath there. I'm serious. The amount of alcohol at this point, like, I'm just like super excited. All right, so the beginning.
That's why, like, I made sure I know, everyone was amped up for tonight. Like, I'm feeling good tonight.
All right, so your game experience at first is being trapped in this like shack in an undisclosed dark location, and you're being forced to play like a role-playing game. But the combat is cards instead of dice. You have a map to move along. You've got miniature versions of yourself carved out of wood, whatever. you end up with like this whole pile of your old figures as you die. Like, the pile gets bigger and bigger each time you die in a run. And as much as like, hey, this is a card game, it's really more of a narrative experience than you might think at first. And like, I'm being real careful to avoid too many spoilers, because I could totally spoil this game like very easily. I wanted to read an example of the Game Master's dialogue as a new map goes down for the first time for you to explore. You guys ready?
Yep.
Totally.
As the air grew humid, your boots become harder to pull from the mud. The dank smell of tepid water invades your nostrils. You have reached the wetlands. Like, that's good vibe there, right?
Dank.
Right?
It's so exactly dank. What I was thinking.
All right. So for the game itself, you have to play your cards in phases on a turn. So you have like about three phases, similar to about how many acts there are in the game. You're going to draw from one of two piles. You've got action cards and sacrificial cards. You can play your sacrificial points, kind of like tapping mana in Magic the Gathering. And then you place your newly paid for card in the slot best suited to your situation. There's like, they call them like lanes. So you have like four lanes to start out with. And there's so many things to learn. About like how cards move and what different cards do what, and like the card information, like the types of cards and the depths of things they can do. Like, it's really detailed. But thankfully, you have a codex right near you to check what everything means as you're learning. And you have like a ton to learn as you go. The next level, or the next phase, I guess, you can play any special items you have in your inventory to help weigh the scales in your favor. And you're playing with teeth as weights, by the way. It took me a while to realize that. Teeth. So you have these scales, and basically you're like, you can tell how good the battle is going. Like, if the scale is too much on your side, you need to do some more damage to either keep it balanced, or, you know, you gotta turn in the direction. And eventually, if it hits the ground, whoever's, you know, on the ground, like their side of the scale, that's it, they're done for that round. So yeah, teeth. And once you're out of things to do in your turn, you ring a hotel desk-style bell, and then you watch with delight or horror as your actions come to life, and then your turn passes to your enemy. And that's when things go horribly, horribly wrong, because you did not plan well. Because you don't know what you're doing at first. It's really trial and error. But to reiterate, like, a big theme of the place, you understand how macabre this is. To play cards, we have to sacrifice others. Like, that is core concept. And one of the first cards we sacrifice appears to be sentient. Like, he starts talking to you as if he were, I don't know, his soul were trapped in the card.
It's so cool.
So you're learning all these rules because the game master's not going to tell you all the things, right? But then eventually you find out you can leave the table. And the room around you has clues to the rules of the cards, the game, and vice versa. And that's when you start to realize, like, the escape room puzzles are this, like, huge extra layer to the mystery of what's going on here. Other thing to note, like, I thought I was going to be really frustrated at first. Like, I was doing poorly at first, and I thought that, like, I was dying a lot, and I got, you know, I'm trying to get to the boss in the first map, and I'm just like, oh, I can't get my way through. And the stoat, he's like our first mysterious talking card, he's like a super jerk about everything. He's like, oh, that was a bad move. Like, everything you do, he's like, oh, no, are you sure? Like, that's terrible. So he's like totally second guessing you the whole time, and you're not really sure if he's being serious or if he's just an ass. But you come back to the game after you've like explored the room, and it becomes a more apparent, like, each time you come through, that you're on this like adventure through the woods, or you're running into like places of worship and sacrifice and kindness and greed. And that totally plays into the theme you're starting to understand about the character that you have. Your game master is part of the Slavic mythology. He's a leshy, and that's kind of in the description of the game. Eventually he gets named as such, so I'm not spoiling too much if you read the description of the game. But the artistic design of the cabin in this first act is all really about that. So you have all these like wooden masks that he's using, because the Leshy in the mythology is this like forest trickster god, and he shapeshifts into different people. So like, if you've ever heard those stories where like you run into the old lady in the woods and she's like, oh, please help me, I'm starving. And you're like, no, I don't have anything to spare. And then like horrible things happen, like your clothes disappear, or like, you know, all of a sudden all of the leather breaks on your harnesses and your horses run off and you're stranded in the middle. Like that's the Leshy, is that kind of, you know, like trickster, right? But if you help the old lady, something good might happen. And so that's kind of this character. And you totally get that vibe from this character. Other thing to notice is like each time you fail, you get a new character card to start your run with. And that imprints like the lessons you've learned from previous runs and the traits of the cards that you've collected and all that stuff. And death is sometimes the most valid way to progress in the game. It's very cool.
That's interesting. Death warp.
Eventually, yeah. Eventually, you're going to reach a combination of puzzle solving and getting your deck style, your play style together, where you can beat all these bosses. And then the game changes a lot. I managed to catch some of this in stream. It was so cool. I had like this S tier run that was just amazing. I had like two really bad runs in a row, and then like I blew through this entire section. It was amazing. But there really is just like so much narrative to unpack around each corner, and different things to like just new things to discover and new things to learn. Middle section of the game is a bit cumbersome, but it kind of felt like the true middle of a storytelling experience too. Like in a traditional storytelling, you have like your rising action, your climax, and your denouement, you know, like those rules of storytelling totally apply in how this is told. Like I mentioned earlier, you have like phases of your turn for gameplay. I kind of felt like there were three phases of the game, like the acts of the story were kind of like, you know, the whole turn. And so like you have the beginning where you're learning, and then you have the middle, which is like, I don't know, gathering your resources and figuring out what you can do with everything. And then you have this whole like rising action climax, you know, third act kind of thing with the final, you know, conclusion. And it's just, it's good storytelling on every level. And in the third act too, like by the time I got there, I realized how much backstory and lore I'd absorbed. I started to feel connected to my cards, like they were my friends, because the story does that to you. And like the cast of characters in these cards, like they all just have so much personality. The maps have personality, like everything, every piece, every cabin, every little like location is kind of its own little character. And then I have the sad thing to say, as far as the review goes, I did not personally get to finish after 24 hours the full story.
Holy shit.
I am so close to the end of the main story.
A beefy game.
I know. And that's I'm so close. But I do have friends who have played and were able to tell me a little bit if my suspicions were true, and I rambled fan theories at them, and they're like, you're on the right track. So that I could say with confidence that it's going where I think it is, and you know, still not spoil it for you guys. But it's, you know, the story's gonna shift some more, and there's just like any other Daniel Mullins experience, there's gonna be all these twists and changes, and you're in for a real mind bender at the end, and I can't wait to finally get to that point. So yay.
Well, sounds like you enjoyed this one. So for $20, what are your thoughts?
Absolutely worth the price. I would pay more. It's fabulous. And even if you don't like card deck building roguelite, if the combination of that sounds terrible to you, but you like weird stuff, you like good storytelling, it's still a win. Please go check it out. It's so cool.
I have one question.
Yes.
I beat this last year on PC. And,
okay.
I'm curious to know exactly how it plays on console.
I would say I could not tell you that it wasn't built for console. Okay. As far as, you know, the controls, there was like maybe one or two things where I was flipping through my cards to the table where like I hit it one too many times and it bounced fast. But the fact that it was that responsive is not necessarily a bad thing. It just means that like I needed to pay attention to where things were. It didn't give you a tutorial as far as like how to see where things were. Like if you're just looking at the card lanes, like we had to hit right bumper and it brings up like all your hot spots. So you can pick your, your codex, you can pick your special items, you can pick your bell and you know, go to your cards, and it kind of like, you know, it, I felt like it really moved you around really well as far as the interface went. And like, I feel like anything else, like you're just kind of on rails when you're moving around the rooms, but that kind of felt like that was part of the experience regardless, and I would still be experiencing that with a mouse. So
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, really, really good. I was, there's another, there's another podcast that I'll be on sometimes, and I just joined them for the end of the year stuff to tally their numbers for game of the year and all that stuff. And this was by far my favorite story of the year. Yeah. And it's a card game. I feel like the game is lucky that the card game is as good as it is, because I feel like my favorite part about it is the story.
Right.
I mean, absolutely. It is a completely brain busting, fourth wall obliterating experience. Like it is, oh, yeah. It is just, it's that kind of like Wild Fez level of kind of,
guilty streaming it because I didn't want to spoil surprises for people. Like I really genuinely felt guilty about that. I was like, oh, maybe I can go on and I'll just like, I'll do some runs to like build my deck and like nothing will happen. And then I had that just S tier run and I was like, sorry, spoilers, because I kind of knew what was coming to a point. I had just like, again, I don't want to give anything too far away, but like I knew I was in that like end run of the first act. I had the item that I needed to go forth, and like, yeah, it solved all the puzzles in the room, and I knew I just needed to get to that next boss and something cool was gonna happen. Oh yeah, but I caught it on camera and it was pretty awesome.
Oh, and Pony Island, his old game, is amazing. I've bought that for a few people. It's always like, it's like $5 or something on.
It is. And I picked it up and went back to it and got through the majority of, I got stuck at one point, like trying to find a ticket. But I got to go check out Hex now, or The Hex, because
I haven't tried
someone
that.
Said that with The Hex, there may be like connected universe stuff to Inscription that, you know, kind of is like a good segue. So yeah, and I'm super into stuff like that with the expanded lore and yeah, super into that. So yeah,
cool. Well, we got to move on. Next game is Joe Wander and the Enigmatic Adventures, developed and published by Frozen Pixel, released April 7th on Series X and S, March 26th on PS5 for $29.99. Start the best enigmatic adventure of your life. Solve brain-teasing puzzles, explore different worlds with smooth platforming, and enjoy the beautiful scenery in this mysterious world of Joe Wander. Jacob, tell us, what is Joe Wander and the Enigmatic Adventures?
So Joe Wander is essentially this Indiana Jones-like character. You're wandering around the different jungles and deserts and stuff. and each level, you have to recover these coins. There's also a number of puzzles that you have to figure out, like how to get from point A to point B. Usually it's a lot of like building stairs or, you know, timing, swings across pits, perfectly and stuff like that. So you do have like some standard, puzzle platforming gameplay, in there, mixed in with the, pitfall kind of stuff. But, yeah, it's chill in the fact that you don't really die. You just get reset at like, you know, the last part. You can't kill any of the animals in the area. You can stun them with your whip. So you can get, you know, you can move a block for a puzzle and stuff like that. You can
jump on them. When you stun them, you jump on them and kill them.
I never tried jumping on them.
You dumb bastard.
I'm dead serious.
You never got to jump on them?
No, because
when they were on their backs.
No, because what happened is that, like, first off, the game doesn't explain that to you. And what had happened is that, like, every single time that one of them touched me, like, obviously it just resets you. And so I figured, oh, touching that, like, being touched by them means, like, you just can't do it. So I was whipping them and, like, moving, like, the blocks and the towers and. This game is probably a lot less frustrating.
You were playing on self-imposed hard mode. That is beautiful.
Yeah.
I am so proud of you. I want to say how...
I'm not going to lie. I mean, like, if that's a pretty good challenge run right there. Yeah. Don't kill any animals.
True. I want to say how unbelievably good-looking this game is.
It really is. It's
like this.
It looks very nice.
This is like photorealistic visuals with a cartoony character. And it looks really, really good. It's smooth animation. Like, the water effects are really good. The wind effects on the plants, like, the grass goes down as you walk on it. It's a surprisingly really good game.
Yeah.
Cool.
I agree. I really liked it.
Yeah. There's four worlds in the game, so it's not like a huge, super long game. Yeah, it's not the hardest game in the world. It's fairly chill. There's some challenging bonus stuff in the game. I didn't mess with any of the bonus levels yet. I've still been working on getting through the main game. It's cool. I think it's a fun game. It's a cute game. I think the price is a little on the steep side. At $30, I would personally give this a try. If it were $20, I would be on board.
Agreed.
That extra $10 just makes it kind of... I guess it went to the visuals. Is damn, the game looks good, but...
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what is your official verdict at $30?
I'd go with a buy it. I'm now really wishing that there was more of a tutorial kind of thing for this game, because that would have been good to know about the bugs or the animals and stuff like that. So, I'm going to go back and play this and not do it on challenge mode anymore.
Proud of you. All right. Next game is D-Exit Eternal Matters. Developed by Sandbloom Studio, published by Handy Games, released April 14th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Embark on a surrealistic afterlife journey to discover the secrets of the broken and mysterious plane of memory in the cinematic adventure with a hint of stealth. Dive into a wonderful voxel world with an intense atmosphere and save the day. Aki, tell us about D-Exit.
Voxel?
Yeah.
I love voxels.
I like stealth, so it works. So in this, you play as a Skelly boy or Skelly girl. You're a Skelly. It doesn't really matter. You wake up some fucking where. I'll be damned if I know, and so do you. And a brand new world of what the fuck is that and what the fuck is this? And you're trying to, you know, first you're escaping from this place that's starting to fall apart a little bit. And when it falls apart, it doesn't just collapse. It falls apart and then floats up into nowhere. It just goes pshoo and goes bye-bye. You're like, oh, well, that's cool. Only to end up being found by this other Skelly who's like, yo, you're important to us, even though you're like, I don't know where the fuck we are, man. And they're like, here, take my special object and get out of here. There's a big bad guy coming, and they're gonna kill the shit out of you. So you run like a little bitch, and then you wake up in town. And you are told you are what's referred to as a Lux, which is a special skeleton that is made to be a hero instead of all the other skellies who are Noxes, who are worthless shitbags, who can't do much of anything because they die real easy. And this is the world of memories. So you will remain alive here as long as someone remembers who the fuck you are. So you meet people like Mary Reed, the pirate, and a bunch of other people that I didn't know. Your quest now, whether you fucking like it or not, is get to these four towers of light and turn them back on so that they will protect this plane of existence, more or less, from just being tossed into the void and disappearing forever. All the while, you can't fight for shit because you're just some fucking schmuck. You might have some special abilities like a lantern. That's one of the special abilities of your artifact, is you get to light things up, and you have to hide from these things called the hidden, which are invisible monsters. And that's where the light comes in. You can shine it on them and then they'll appear for a short period of time. However, if you hold it on them, they will eventually figure out where you are and come and eat your fucking face. So don't hold it on them. And yeah, it is a stealth game through and fucking through. You have to, you know, crouch and hide in grass and avoid being seen by these things. Thankfully, they don't have gigantic sight cones, so that's nice. But they are faster than you, so don't get seen or you're fucked. You know, eventually you get some other abilities, like, oh, you can pick things up and bring them towards you or further away, things like that. Nothing super amazing. You can never be like, oh, that's a hidden. I want to go up and punch it in the face and keep doing it until it dies. No, you don't get that. You get to hide. That's what you get to do. And all these hiddens are being brought in by Donovan, the former Lux, who has apparently gone batshit insane and brought corruption and all these hidden in. So you have to power up these four towers that he turned off to protect the place and stop him from being a dick. And that's it. I had to restart three different times. Restart twice.
What would you do?
I've played it three times. Well, the first time I found out there's these little soul fragments you can find in each level. There's only three of them. They're not too hard to find. And they open these soul fragment doors, which give you a piece of some legendary armor that you equip. The armor doesn't do anything but makes you look cooler. Otherwise, you're just a naked skeleton. And there's an achievement for doing that. However, if you pass by any of this stuff, you can't go back to the area you were. So you have to get it while you're there, or you're not getting it unless you do another playthrough. So I accidentally bypassed one of the doors, and I was like, oh, I'll just restart real quick and get back through there. It didn't take long. And then I got to chapter 3, and I kind of completely broke the game, because it's me.
Proud of you.
Yeah, so I contacted the devs about that, and they're working on a patch for that, which means I had to restart it again, because yay!
Yeah.
This game will take you a while. The first time through, the second time, you'll know where everything is, because nothing changes or anything. This is a decently long game. You get to talk to the other skeletons. They're all fun for the most part. Lots of them do have voice lines. I don't think all of them do, but most of them do. And there's some very nice voices for this. I really enjoyed the game. It's a really good stealth game.
What does it play like? Is it like a isometric, or is it you said voxel, so I'm just curious to know what it kind of feels like, if you could compare it to something.
I'm really bad at this. It's third person, a little higher than over the shoulder.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
So it's a bit pulled out, and you can move the camera around, obviously, because a game from forever ago. It reminds me a lot of Stick stealth games, except for the camera's pulled out like twice as far.
Cool.
And you don't get to kill people with, which is a shame. Really want to kill things in that game. Any other questions? No? Okay. That's my review.
Well, I guess the only last question is, it's $20. What's your verdict?
Fuck yes. This is an easy buy it for $20.
Nice job with the game breaking bug, you know, way to help make the game.
I do that so often. I broke Mato, which is a game I reviewed earlier this year. I broke another game this year. I don't remember what it was. I break at least one game every year, at least.
That's
what we do.
About certain things, yeah.
That's what we do.
It's like by reviewing, we are de facto QA people sometimes.
Yeah, I was going to say, people that you get hired if you're a good game breaker. So
yeah,
you
know, for sure.
It's value. You know, that's the you might be hard to get that your fix in that day one patch, which is quite nice to have. Yeah.
Once I actually finished the game, because I haven't actually managed to finish it because of all the restarts, I would have already had it done by now, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But restarting it and playing through it three times, and now working on the fourth, it gets a lot slower at that point, because it's like, I've already done this. I don't want to do this again.
Oh, man. All right. Well, moving on. Next game is Panic Porcupine, developed by Shiny Dolphin and Spicy Gyro Games, published by HOF Studios, Released April 20th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $7.99. A meat-like, hedge-like mashup. Dr. Proventriculus, oh my god, is snatching up the chickaburbs. Help panic blast through over 50 stages of topsy-turvy, spike-laced, slime-drenched, buzzsaw-filled death traps to rescue them. And remember, there are no rings. Bree, what is Panic Porcupine?
Oh my goodness. So, I'm going to start out by saying I did not have the best experience with this game. Also, animals. Lots of animals. We're going to talk more about animals. So, the game starts out with a cutscene from what I think is a Sonic clone, showing the evil Dr. Negman Bonotnik. That's totally not his name. That's just what I called him. Okay. Because he looked like he was an old science dude going through a midlife crisis and trying to look hip and calling himself Bo. His name is evil Dr. Proventriculus, which, if you guys don't know, is the true stomach of a chicken where all of the digestive acids are. I have a diagram of a chicken.
Please take a picture and send it.
And he is harvesting the chickaburbs for nefarious purposes.
After that, we had
a KFC.
So he's got like skinny jeans and like an 80s, you know, like, I don't know, kind of jacket. But he's trying too hard to act cool. But, you know, otherwise he's got the whole like Robotnik kind of, you know, whatever. But he's like trying to be cool. That's what he looked like to me. Seriously. So next we see our hero with the call to action high atop the mountain with the sanguine pangolin. And the sanguine pangolin has a portrait of a very beefy-looking blue hedgehog over his mantle. And I start to wonder if this is going to be Slashvik instead of a love letter to Sonic. And then we're told of a legend involving an awesome hedgehog who's supposed to save the day, but he got a movie deal. And then we have to settle for this neurotic porcupine who's totally just there for mental health help, but instead is thrust into a world he does not feel equipped to handle and told to save us all. I don't think I was prepared for this game. Yeah. So there's six zones with around 9 levels each and a boss at the end. We have the hills that are green.
This is I'm sorry. I don't need to.
Yeah, no. I'm gonna get there. Continue. I'm gonna get there, trust me. Wow. And then we have Big Top Bedlam, which is kind of like circus-themed casino nights. We've got the construction zone, the haunted hill, winter night, Lobotomy Labs, which is kind of like the chemical plant zone. So kind of like a mix of things from like Sonic 1 and 2, right? And then I'm going to be honest, the big boss at the end, I did not see with my own eyes. I had to watch video of other people's gameplay that were actually good at this game because I got stuck in zone 2. All right. So it started out okay. Like, we get this total Sonic vibe. And by level 5, I was stuck. There's a spinny pole mechanic that was so frustrating. And you've got unlimited lives, which is great because you're going to use all of them.
How frustrating was it?
Yeah. I wrote a note to Joe. I'm not going to repeat exactly, but I'm going to explain because this is the story. this is story time here. I was so frustrated. I had to take a break to do anything else. So I ripped apart my couch chair to finally replace the springs at 2 o'clock in the morning. That's how frustrated I was.
10 out of 10.
True story.
Wow.
The other human in my house was just like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, this fucking porcupine.
I'm playing Panic Porcupine. Leave me alone. Right.
So I came back to it later. I'm finally able to get through the level, but I met with my next issue almost immediately. And it's this thought that's been creeping up on me this whole time. The game isn't fast. Like, for me, at this point. So in Sonic, when I was a little kid and I'm young and terrible at games, it still felt fast, and that was fun. In Panic Porcupine, I had to stop and think about the physics so much, I barely progressed through a really short level in a reasonable amount of time. In Sonic, the goal is to get to the end and save your Bun Bun and Birdie pals. Even if you weren't great at the cool trick to get up the ramp or get all the coins, there's usually another way, often less rewarding, to get yourself through a section and to the end of the level, right? Panic Porcupine, PP for short, by the way. The ability to be a speedy running ring collector really isn't our goal. Like, you have to complete the level. To complete the level, you have to get all of the chickaburbs. There's still secrets to find, eggs to collect, but they really aren't required for progression. So, I start going back through the old levels, see what I'm doing wrong. And then I find out that there's accessibility features, which was nice, and it did help. One of them, you can blur the backgrounds so that you can see the spiky
doom
better.
I'm watching and a trailer of this. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. There's also a way to set it so that it does, like, essentially what would happen for, like, the first, I don't know, 10 levels that I did is anytime you died, it reset the entire level. All of your chickaburbs, you had to go back and find them all again. And there's usually, somewhere between 3 and 4 per level. So there's a setting where you can put it on where you find the chickaburb, and as long as you don't exit the level, and that includes quick resume, I will say, I came back to it the next day, and it was like, oh, quick resume, you're still in the middle of that level you were screaming about. I only had that one chickaburb left to get, and I still have not gotten that one chickaburb to end that one level. I'll get back to that. So I start to get a little further, found my way to about halfway through the second zone, and that's where I got stuck again. And, I remember it being called a mashup with Meat Boy, and that's where it kind of, like, clicked in my head. So I started to look at the game through that lens instead of the, like, hey, I'm expecting a Sonic game. Not that the original Sonic wasn't about its physics, but it also had stuff to do with the speediness, and those other things I said about, you know, how you progress in a level were very different. This starts to look more like a precision puzzle platformer, more along the lines of Meat Boy and its level of frustration. And then I started to relax into it a little, just a little, you know. That said, I screamed fuck you porcupines so many times over the last few days, it was suggested by the other human in the house that I talk about porcupine mating for my review instead. Would you guys like to hear some facts?
Sure. Hell yeah, we do.
All right, so female porcupines have a fertility window that's like a few hours long, right? So they gotta go out, shake their thing, call all the boy porcupines to the yard, right? And then turns into Porcupine Bite Club. There's biting, there's quills flung everywhere, and finally, blood, quills, all of that, you get one victor. And he is so excited, he lets out this, like, fire hose pressure, full body, golden shower of urine all over the female before they can get down to business. Because you gotta soften the quills, yo.
Oh, Jesus.
Usually I have to pay money for that.
So, the short answer is, ultimately, I wanted this game to be for me, and it's not. It's for somebody. It's for people who are good precision platformers. With a kind of puzzle element to it, right? The levels are pretty short. It's just figuring out how to get through them. And once you get good at the very, very precision required mechanics, you can get through the levels pretty fast, and it starts to feel more like, you know, you're expecting it to be with Sonic. And I wanted it to be Sonic with Meat Boy elements, but it just wasn't Sonic the way that I wanted. And the game's not bad or broken. It's not at all. It really requires dedication to the hard physics of the game, and I was not prepared for that.
It looks like a cross between, like, I Want to Be the Guy and Sonic, like, sort mm-hmm. of a, like, a mean game, which some people are interested in, some people dig. I don't know if it's, like, you know what I mean? Like, just a game that's there to throw the spikes in your face as often as possible. But I don't know, like, do you think someone who likes that kind of thing would like this?
I think absolutely. If you just loved, like, Meat Boy, you loved that level of, like, try and try and try again. You really love that retro, like, but it's let me tell you about the spinny mechanic without repeating the things that I said to Joe, because they're mean and I don't want to repeat them. But there's this pole where you have to spin on it, and you release yourself from the pole to fling yourself. So physics, you only go as high as you are far, like speedy thing go in, speedy thing come out, right? And so when you land back on the pole, you're spinning on the pole faster, and then you have to time it to release again to get a little bit higher, and so on. So you have to fling yourself with momentum, as an example. And if you are just not prepared by the time it goes faster and you get out of timing, it's instant death. And it was so frustrating for me, that one mechanic, just kind of like, and that's where I got stuck in the game. And I ended up finding some really fabulous footage elsewhere, but, to kind of see more of the game. And it looks like there's some really cool elements. I had fun with some of the levels, but that one mechanic was enough to just make me rage. So, if you like, though, that precision element, that, like, really tight, you gotta get it perfect kind of stuff, you might really enjoy this. And if, you know, you're just in it for the Sonic, I mean, again, the original Sonic had a lot more of that physics element than, say, Sonic 2. And I think I was hoping more for that, like, Sonic 2 kind of fun vibe with a little bit of extra challenge to it. And it's just not quite what I got. So.
Well, it's $8. What is your verdict?
I would say, again, if you really like that kind of precision platforming, and you're in for that hard, like, Meat Boy frustration kind of stuff, like, it's at least to try it. But if you're coming at it looking for that, like, Sonic clone, this ain't your game.
Cool. All right, next up is Mangavania, developed by Alexander Nikolaev, published by Sometimes You, releasing April 26th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $4.99 each. Yes, it will have stacks, so if you are into those, good news for you. Join the adventure as Yuriko, a young ninja who has gone to the underworld to find a cure for his brother. Free the lost souls to advance to the next level. Find spirits in secret places. They will tell you a story or give you advice. Explore dungeons, fight monsters, and meet new friends. Aki, tell us about your time in Mangavania.
I'm glad that explained the story, because I didn't understand any story in that game. So basically, you play as this guy. You have to go collect a sword, and then you kill things and get to the end of the level. Usually, getting to the end of the level requires you to find some firefly-like things and kill them. I think like two or three or something in most levels to do that. And it becomes quite a bit of a simplistic puzzle, but a rather large simplistic puzzle, because, you know, some areas they might have, you know, other locks where you have to find a key, so you have to go down this pathway, go grab a key, etc., etc. And it's just getting to the end of the level. None of them are particularly big. I think the longest one took me like 3 or 4 minutes to get through. And at the end of every level, you are graded from your fuck up all the way to you're super good, here's an S rank. And that determines how many upgrade points you get. And then you can upgrade your character with like, oh, now you have a bow, or here's a double jump, and things like that. So, you know, somewhat useful. And then you just continue to the next level. There's 20 levels. Anytime you find one of the spirits, which, again, not particularly hard in most of the levels, they give you a little bit of story. Usually they have a tendency to say, oh, I'm not really stuck here, I was hiding, but then someone accidentally locked the door. Which is, you know, so much story, I just couldn't handle it. Otherwise, nothing in here really tells you a story. You're just going from point A to point B in every level, and there's 20 of them, and that's it. It's not particularly hard. Every enemy can be killed within a few hits, lots of them with only one, thankfully. There is a lot of platforming in this. There are a few precision platforming chunks, but most of them don't require much of any precision at all. So it's not too bad. It took me like 2 or 3 hours to 100% it. All the achievements are just for beating each level. So yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
Well, did you have fun with it?
It was okay. I didn't hate it, but it wasn't that it was bad or good. It was just barely memorable, which is kind of a shame. It's just, you know, if you've played a platformer, you've probably played a better one. But it's not, you know, bad. It's just, it exists.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, it is $5 and it is presently on sale for the next couple of days for $4. What are your thoughts?
I think it's worth that. You know, it's not bad. So yeah, if you like precision platforming and hitting things with a big sword, then fuck it. Why not?
Sounds good. Next up, we have some DLC for Vampire Survivors, Tides of the Foscari, developed and published by Ponkle, released April 13th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $1.99 as DLC for Vampire Survivors. Man, they're getting really expensive with this game. I don't know what we could do. Tides of the Foscari is the second DLC expansion for Vampire Survivors, introducing another huge stage, as well as a new slate of new characters, monsters, and weapons to play with. And of course, secrets may be lurking in the shadowed canopies of the deep forest. As always, we can neither confirm nor deny the presence of vampires. Jacob, what is going on in Tides of the Foscari?
So this one kind of takes like a RPG-esque, I don't know, direction towards it. And it's not set up like the other ones. This one has like this weird labyrinth, like in the middle, but also with certain characters after you've unlocked certain stuff, which of course I know I'm talking in the vaguest of terms, but if you've played Vampire Survivors before, you know, like this is the kind of stuff that you're in for.
Yeah.
You know, you have to unlock certain characters, unlock certain weapons, go back to playing says certain characters who then have to go to X place on the map. You know, you defeat the things around it. You unlock this character. You have to pay for it. Blah, 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 so on and so forth. And then you've unlocked, you know, like the special hell level that's a 7-Eleven in, out in Kansas or something like that. I don't, I'm just, you know, it like, it's all over the place. But
you're all over the place.
I agree. But again, so is this DLC. And there are new powers that you can unlock, which are really just, like, it's more magic-oriented stuff. And then there's also this badge, which then makes the enemy, like the monster, stronger. And a lot of that stuff can get upgraded and, of course, make new weapons when combined with other stuff. And it's a lot of just playing around with the different combos and finding out what works for you. And honestly, this game, like this DLC just gives the game even more longevity. Because of course you can then go back and play the old maps too with these new characters and weapons and see what happens there.
Yeah, because if I had a gripe with Vampire Survivors, it's just that it was too short and not enough content.
Yeah, like you definitely, yeah, like
I mean, they're just robbing you for that $5 these days.
I was done after 10 minutes, you know. I that's how
like, I was done after a solid 7 months of gameplay, so I just what's the point anymore if it's only got that much content?
So yeah.
So this is $2. What do you think? Is it worth the additional $2 investment into Vampire Survivors?
Absolutely. I mean, all the DLC has added a substantial amount of stuff to an already lore heavy game. So yeah, definitely pay that $2.
Cool. All right, and finally tonight, we can't have Stemmage on the show without some Ball Squad action. Grant, take it away. Ball Squad. Love it. Grant, you ready to talk pinball?
Yes, I'm ready to talk about precision platforming.
Precision platforming in Pinball FX. We've got three DLC batches to talk about. Let's go in order of cost. We'll start off with Crypt of the Necrodancer Pinball, developed and published by Zen Studios. It released on Xbox, PlayStation, and PC for $5.49 as DLC for Pinball FX. Challenge your skills in this pinball and rhythm fusion table, which captures the wacky atmosphere and killer soundtrack of the acclaimed roguelike. Stop the Necrodancer once more as you use your flippers to battle bosses and acquire the golden loot. Grant, what is going on in the Crypt of the Necrodancer pinball table?
Well, Zen has done a number of game-themed tables over the years. They did Portal in the early days. They always try to take advantage of what the games did in their pinball mechanics, which I appreciate. I feel like I wish they would do more of this, not just stick with what you expect from a pinball machine, but do more video gamey things. And Crypt of the Decronancer, which is all I feel like I can say tonight, it does a lot of that. One of my favorite things about this table is that it's very simple. I feel like a lot of the tables they put out, they're complicated. They have a lot of ramps. There's a lot of stuff that might be hidden in the back. They can feel a bit overwhelming if you're not willing to just pull up the tutorial and kind of read through what the goals are for these tables. But Crypt of the Necrodancer is very simple. Like, you can see everything that's available to you, and the game starts with these little dudes dancing around the table in front of you, like little bash toys that are animated, little pixelated guys that kind of move back and forth across the playfield to block your shots. So the coolest video gamey thing about this is that when you drain a ball, when you lose a ball, you don't lose it. You lose health, right? So if you choose to hit these guys or hit ramps or other things in time with the music, much like the game, you can gain health. And then when you lose the ball, you lose health. You travel through different levels through sort of a game, much different than you would in pinball. And it works really, really well. The soundtrack is banging. It's they pulled a bunch of, I don't remember how many tracks he said, like.
Like 10, I think he said.
10 Danny B songs from the game.
Something crazy like that.
Yeah. They haven't experimented with like time-based shots before. I will say the time-based stuff's a little weird because, you know, when you flip your flipper and hit the ball has to travel and hit something else. So you're not really playing Guitar Hero on a pinball machine. You are hitting. You're attempting to make the ball connect with things in time. That's where the perks come from. But it's really cool. It's very fun. It's really colorful. It works with the game really well. They built sort of a 3D model of the main character that sits up there and dances around and points to stuff and falls over. And it's really cool. It's got a whole different set of rules that you might not expect from a pinball machine. And this is the kind of stuff I want them to do. I want them to go, you know what, we're making games that replicate real life, but we have the opportunity to do something that is way more video gamey and the kind of thing that you can't experience in real life. And I think this table's a really good representation of that, in my opinion.
Cool. Well, the table's sitting at $549. Is it worth it?
Yeah, I think it's a pinball machine. So if you're in that camp already, I would call it a no-brainer only to listen to. The only complaint I have about the machine is the fact that the songs don't really loop correctly. What happens is when you beat a level, you sort of can spend time collecting jackpots and stuff, and then the song will end, and there'll be silence, and the song starts over. I feel like it would have been a really easy move to make the songs loop properly, and as an audio guy, that's just something I noticed. It can kind of pull you out of the vibe a little bit before you get back in. But other than that, I just love it. I think it's a great addition. And for $5, if you're a pinhead, it's a steal.
Cool. Sure. All right. Next up is the Williams Pinball Twilight Zone table, developed and published by Zen Studios, released for Pinball FX for $9.99. You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone with a pinball that isn't and flippers that aren't. Keep telling yourself it's only a game. Earn high scores that are from another dimension with this classic joining the Pinball FX library. Grant, what's going on in Twilight Zone?
If nothing else, the advertisement for that table is really good.
It is. I completely agree. And that write-up is really good. That's probably better than anything they had for the actual table. but yeah, I'm with you. So
that's a shame.
I mean, so the game, this is part of the Williams line. So this is part of the real life pinball recreation series. They basically take like real Williams games. The original, you know, chip based soundtracks from the 90s and recreate them and also add their own flair to it. So if you play their version, there is a spaceman over on the right that shoots lasers at the ball, doesn't change gameplay, or you can turn that off. You can go vanilla and play with, you know, true physics and just play the game as it was intended. It's a Pat Lawler game. Adam's Family and Whitewater, like Funhouse, like he did a lot of 90s classics. He's one of the kings of pinball, and the game is designed really well. It's a wide body machine, which is a game that's wider than usual. It's big fat table. This is not my favorite pinball machine, I will say. I've never been a Twilight Zone guy, but I will tell you, if you are, this is absolutely the best recreation of this table I've seen. It has a couple really funny quirks about it. There's this thing called the Powerball, which is this little ceramic ball that's slightly bigger than a normal pinball that will show up, and the game knows that you're playing with the ceramic ball, and it feels different. They did a really good job creating the physics of that. But it's solid. I mean, it is a licensed recreation of the original Williams game. Again, not my personal favorite, only because I love games with a lot of flow, and this is a game with a lot of like shooting and stopping and toys and stuff. And so that's more my preference, but the game really is a perfect recreation of the classic that a lot of people know from the 90s. So,
well, is it worth the $10 price tag?
If you know Twilight Zone and you love it, it's great. If you are able to play the machine really close to your monitor so you can see all of the detail and all the places the ball could disappear into so you can really pay attention, I would also say it's worth it. It's a classic. It's very deep. But it is one of the more difficult ones, in my opinion, to recreate virtually. But it's really well done. So if you like Twilight Zone, hit it. And if you're not sure, watch some gameplay. And
if you're not sure, all the tables have free trials that you could download and give a spin. I think for a few minutes it lets you play them. I'm not sure what the trial situation is on all the tables, but you could fire them up, give them a play for a couple of minutes, and see if it's worth your $10. But
yeah, you can play them all for I think a minute or two with no penalty or anything more than that probably. But yeah, all tables outside of their whole pinball pass thing, you can give a shot.
Yeah. So. All right, and finally, we've got the Godzilla vs. Kong Pinball Pack, developed and published by Zen Studios, released on Xbox, PlayStation, PC for DLC for Pinball FX for $14.99. Godzilla and Kong unleash their powers in this epic pinball pack, play three monstrous tables, and be the king of the leaderboards. Grant, what is going on in the Kong and Godzilla pinball extravaganza?
Yeah, so this is the three pack, three tables, one Kong table, one Godzilla table, and then a Godzilla versus table. So this is not black and white King Kong. This is not classic Kong. This is Skull Island Kong. This isn't classic Godzilla. This is not, you're not going to hear, you're going to hear the stuff you might expect from a modern Godzilla. So in terms of the treatment, it really just depends on what you're into. I like all of it. But just wanted to put that out there because it may be a surprise if you're expecting something a little more classic. My least favorite table is probably Kong, and it's only because I didn't quite wrap my head around it. It is one of those tables that has a lot of shots. You're not quite sure where they go unless you have a good view. It isn't quite as flowy as some of the other ones.
It's my second one. It's a huge mountain, isn't it?
It is. It is sort of a big mountain in the back. And there's nothing wrong with not knowing where your shot's going to come from, but there's some stuff that goes on back there that you can't necessarily see. The big theme with these tables is density. I feel like if you're playing with a vertical monitor, you're going to get a lot out of these tables, but there's some stuff it's just hard to see. And that's kind of a thing. If you're able to sit up nice and close to your big monitor or TV, I think you can take it all apart, but just reading the text on the inserts is kind of hard to parse, but that's just how it is anymore. Kong's cool. I think that, my second favorite's probably the Godzilla versus Kong table. Again, very modern, not a lot to say about it other than I think it's one of the ones that you're probably going to have to watch a tutorial to really sink your teeth into. Sometimes you can just play a pinball machine and shoot for the flashing lights, and that's all you really need to concentrate on. But there's a bit more complexity in the versus table. Godzilla, Mel had mentioned it being his favorite when he was on the show a little bit ago, and I think it's probably my favorite as well. It feels more like a 90s table to me. Things are a bit more open, but there's a lot to shoot for. You can cool follow the ball up too.
I even mentioned this in the interview. I love the spines on the side of the table.
Yeah, it's rad. It feels big. I mean, that's the kind of stuff, again, you can't do in real life. And they're really going for it. So I really like Godzilla. There's one thing that they do that I don't enjoy, and they've done it in the run of tables in the last like two or three years, but in my opinion, if you're going to take points away from a player, it needs to be justified. And what happens a lot in their tables is that a lot of times you're trying to light up a bunch of lights in sequence. Maybe it's the in lanes where the balls come back to your flippers. And if you accidentally roll the ball over a lit light, the light turns off. And I don't like that. That's something that's bothered me in their last few designs. I feel like you should never remove the forward progression of a pinball game. Spend a lot of money to get there. And I feel like that's just that's sort of like you're going to lose, right? You lose at pinball, you lose at Tetris. You don't want to feel like you don't want someone to feel like they've made any sort of backward progression. So in terms of scoring and design, that's probably my biggest critique of this package. I think this package is really, really good. I think if you're a fan of Kong and Godzilla, it's a pretty killer set of tables. I will also say that there is a long list of really good packages of tables that Zen has done, some licensed, some unlicensed, that cost a bit less. So again, play the trials of these and see what you think. See if they grab you. So the Kong and Godzilla pack, I think it's good, but I do kind of want to spend more time with it and see if any of them kind of have the lasting power as some of their other creations. So yeah, that's my take.
Well, that one is $15. What are your thoughts on that bundle?
I this is more of a try instead of buy, in my opinion, and they're very easy to try. I feel like Godzilla's the strongest of the three, not as big on the Kong one, and 15 is a bit more than you might pay for some other packs from them, but I feel like they are really, they're solid tables. It's just a matter of the kind of pinball you like.
Yeah, so I think it evens out in that it being $15 for three tables is the cheapest option per table for this batch of releases. I know at least on Xbox, there was a Marvel release as well that brought back a bunch of old Marvel tables into like a $30 package. Unfortunately, we didn't get to check that one out. I didn't even know that one released until I fired up the game and saw that one sitting there as well. But
I didn't know that was there. Tables.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. I thought that was one of the ones that was not included in the new release, but that's great. Those are some great tables in there.
Yeah. I know. I love the Marvel tables. So to see those come back is awesome. So I'm probably going to pick those up eventually.
Yeah, but, and they did release a bunch of free shit too. Like there's like the original Sorcerer's Lair is available for free. Fish Tales from Williams is available for free. So if you're just in the mood for some pinball, they got three tables free if you just download the client. So if you want to bang some balls around,
smack some balls, right?
You know, they're there.
This show is just balls and teeth, and Jacob knows all about that.
There been so many.
There were a lot of animals too. Let's be fair.
All teeth and animals. Again, Jacob is highly qualified.
there were so many teeth in this, like more teeth than expected.
Right? Do you have a Tron song that has teeth in it, or like tooth? Or
No.
I mean, where's the album? Let's see. He starts small. Jacob knows about that.
Yeah, I've been with you for years.
He ends small. Yep, Jacob, he's good there.
I put out the effort that you give. So
this one would be perfect for our show. Number four, religious discussions. Grant, I haven't heard the album in a good number of years, so I don't remember any of the tracks off the top of my head. Which is your favorite? What should we end the show with?
Play 2979245 8.
Cool, we'll do
8675309.
Yeah, that's right. It's the Speed of Light, and that's the Light Sailor song. Play that one if you're gonna ask me.
Sounds good.
Or just play 8675309. I mean, whatever you want to do.
Well, one of us will get us a copyright strike. One of them hopefully won't. So I guess we'll find out. But that is it for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for hanging out, keeping us company. Thank you for being here. Grant and Bree, thanks for taking the time to come hang out and spend the whole episode. Big thanks to Adrian for coming on, chatting about the game. Cavity Busters is out now. You could check it out. It is a pretty gory, crazy, over-the-top Isaac-like. It is absolutely worth checking out. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Drink more, talk less.
I stopped playing Vampire Survivors because I got addicted to Inscription.
Oh, wow. There you go. It's
a good game. Currently I'm still addicted to Disney Dreamlight Valley. So,
shocker.
You know. Of course you are.
I wish I was addicted to Disney Tron Identity, but it's over. Hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
just like this show.
Rude.
Ha 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 ha.